Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Main Street Universe. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols-George, and I am filling in during the first part of the show here today for Daniel, as he had something coming up last minute, but he'll be joining us a little bit later in the show along with Janice. We've also got Kevin and Brett on with us today. I'm seeing a lot of people kind of jumping into the chat room here and starting in with us, and I just want to let you know that today on our show we've got Christopher Pinzak on, and he's going to be joining us shortly. He's generously giving us his time in the middle of appointments and busy schedules that he has going on. Witchcraft, Wicca, magic, and paganism. The lores and wisdoms of these traditions have been around in one form or another for much of time. These ways have been a long part of our culture and society, and at times it has been hidden with everyday tasks and cultural celebrations. In recent times, it has grown and found more of a place in culture and society. People are free to openly study and wear symbols without persecution. While some areas are still reserved, it is not hard to find a little herbal shop, New Age store, or Wiccan community in many places. Going to take just a minute here to kind of get going with Daniel's traditions. And I apologize here, I'm kind of just getting on the flow here with him. We'll be right back. right, and welcome here to Main Street Universe. Again, my name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am filling in during the first part of the show here for Daniel today. We've also got Kevin and Brett with us that are going to be joining in until Daniel and Janice are able to get here. Today we have featured guest Christopher Pinsek with us, and Chris is a witch teacher, writer, and healing practitioner. His practice draws upon the foundation of both modern and traditional witchcraft, blended with the wisdom of mystical traditions from across the globe. As a practitioner and teacher of shamanism, tarot, Reiki healing, herbalism, astrology, and Kabbalah. He is the founder of Temple of Witchcraft Tradition and System of Magical Training, based upon the material of his books and classes. He is an ordained minister, primarily serving the New Hampshire and Massachusetts pagan and metaphysical communities through public rituals, private counsel, and teaching, though he travels extensively teaching throughout the United States. He is an award-winning author. He studied extensively with witches, mystics, shamans, and healers. And if you'd like to learn more about Chris, by the way, or to look at the work he's doing, the books and things that he's published, you can go to his website at christopherpinsek.com, and that has all of his information on there. And again, Chris is an award-winning author. He's published numerous books and CDs, as well as a few other products. He's developed many courses and become one of the most noted names as a resource and expert on witchcraft. And I'm going to go ahead and bring Chris on here, as well as open up the mics for Kevin and Brett. And Chris, I just want to welcome you here to Main Street Universe, and thanks so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. I know that a lot of people that are listening in are familiar with your work, but maybe you can kind of share with us your story, you know, what brought Chris into this arena and the wealth of sharing and knowledge and, you know, bringing all this information to the pagan community.
Sure, sure. Actually, I started as a skeptic, strangely. I had a friend who was involved in this, actually a mentor of mine, who was my art teacher for many years and friend of the family. And when I graduated from all-boys Catholic school, you know, high school, it was kind of in the days in witchcraft and occultism where you didn't really tell too many people, and you certainly there was no, like, pagan families like there are now. So you really didn't tell people you were a witch until they were over 18 and people weren't proselytizing, and people were very careful about it at that time. So she waited to tell me that she was a witch till after I was 18, and she knew I was searching for something and I didn't want to be Catholic anymore. And when she first did, I thought she was crazy. Like, I thought, you know, here's this woman who I love and respect, and she thinks she's a witch, and she thinks she can cast spells. Like, how crazy is that? I need to understand why she feels this way, and because I respected her so much and still do. And so, you know, through discussions with her, I was like, all right, maybe this is not as crazy as I thought it was. And she started teaching me a little bit of meditation. And the real clincher of it all was, you know, before we could speak, she gave me three books. And one was a book on witchcraft. One was a book on hermetic philosophy. And one was a book on quantum physics. And at the time, I was like, oh, these have nothing to do with each other. You know,
we're getting a little bit of breaking up on you, Chris.
Okay.
There we go. Perfect.
So then in the end, you know, she's like, let's discuss what they all have in common. And it really blew my mind to think about how they're all saying similar things from three different perspectives.
I can really relate to that because I studied world religions and different philosophies myself for quite a while. And that was the one thing that I came back to is they might be using different terminology, but they were all coming down to the same foundational roots.
Right. Right. I'm a big believer in, you know, what people like to call the perennial tradition or the eternal wisdom. I think, you know, in all mystical traditions, there's a similar thread, and the Orthodox religions express it differently. But if you get into the mysticism, you know, they're all saying something similar. But I think it can be important to ground yourself in a practice of one so you can actually experience it. So for me, my doorway happened to be witchcraft, you know, and it could have been just as easily something else, but that's who opened the door for me.
And that's great. I went through a similar experience as well with not being raised in Catholicism, but the Presbyterian religion, and then moved into studying witchcraft and being part of Coven's and running my own. I've got Kevin here on the line, Kevin Baird, and he's got a question, so I'm going to let him go ahead and jump in and ask something here. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for being on the show. I've been a solitary for like 100 years, and I find that in my practice and my day-to-day that I have things that happen to me that sort of inspire me and like recharge my batteries to like move me on to like the next day, and validations that my path, my pursuits are, you know, genuine, and it just, you know, revitalizes my soul and my connection to, you know, earth, air, fire, water kind of stuff. Are there any that you can share that's happened to you recently that just continues your inspiration for what you do?
Well, I was actually just talking to one of the priestesses in the Temple of Witchcraft and relating just even simple things of psychic experiences even shared by other people. And, you know, she was just like, isn't it kind of funny? We've been doing this for 20 years, and this is, you know, your full-time, everyday reality, and you can still be blown away by things. I have an amazing husband and wife couple out in Sweden who host me when I teach out in Sweden. And the woman, Karen, is very incredibly psychic, like probably one of the most psychic people I know, and just picks up things that, you know, are very literal truths and doesn't realize it, and just shares these messages with you when you're open to hearing them. And so recently we bought property for the Temple of Witchcraft, and we're in the midst of raising funds for our parking lot and, you know, really trying to establish a grounded earth community. And she knew we were thinking about things, but she didn't really, you know, have any of the details at this time. We don't talk that often. And she emailed me to say that she had this dream. And in the dream, this woman with a dark kind of raven cloak swooped down and was looking into the windows of a big white old house and saw me playing piano in the house and was very happy and told her that, you know, you had to tell Christopher he was in the right place, that all is good. And so she sent me this email, and she's like, I don't know what the symbolism means. Do you think the house was a temple? You know, I don't know what goddess that was, because she works primarily with the Norse goddesses and gods. And so for me, in my own personal path, I work with a crow goddess. So it was this dark, you know, winged woman. The house that we just bought that's going to be the temple space where I'm living with my partners on the top two floor to help pay the mortgage and, you know, get the actual temple set up, is a big old white Victorian. And we just made arrangements because I'm a musician and I haven't had a piano for about 8 years. We just made arrangements to have a piano brought in. And so, you know, there's three very verifiable things, but just to know with all the weight and responsibilities of mortgage and finances and community building, for someone to, you know, send that message at that time just blew me away how precise it was. You know, so that was very validating.
That's awesome. I mean, and I think that's one of the great things about being involved in this work is that, you know, you can tap into these skills, you can get these messages, and I think we all kind of have that potential there, but it's just a matter of listening and opening up and learning to put those pieces together in there. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, sometimes it's nice, too, when you're in a community that you can get that support from other practitioners, and sometimes when you get messages for yourself, you have to kind of decipher, is this what I want or is this what I fear? And sometimes when someone has no knowledge of the situation and they offer something to you, you know, it can be very validating as well. And I think that's part of the brotherhood and sisterhood of the craft.
And I think that's an important factor, because even when you're a solo practitioner, those connections, whether it's through online or within your community or wherever it is very useful to help keep that motivation and that inspiration up and going.
Right. Absolutely.
I find that for myself, because I'm in an area that it's just so underground, and I think it's just a couple of people around here that kind of said, oh, it might be nice to just kind of gather a little bit, but, you know, they've not really looked at anything, so it's a very different area here from, for example, where I studied things. So I've got Brett live on the line also, and he had a question as well. Go ahead, Brett.
You mentioned the Temple of Witchcraft. That kind of opened my thought process to the series of books, and then you went further into getting those pieces together. And I think this series is one of the major things that accomplishes that. It's your Inner Temple series.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the fact, you know, you got brought into the craft through as a skeptic, what actually started you bringing on this series of books? What started you writing that one?
It really grew out of the classes that I was teaching. I would say pretty much everything grew out of those classes. When I first trained, I ended up having a small group of friends that just kind of noticed that some major shifts happened with me. And I went from a fairly sometimes, you know, 50%, I'd say optimistic, 50% pretty cynical, in the music industry and going to college at the time, and made this real shift of really carrying the embodiment and the spirit of everything's being possible. I wasn't using the word magic. I wasn't saying that I was a witch, because I was still very private about it. I thought this was crazy, so my friends will think it's crazy. But something kind of broke open where a couple friends asked me, you know, what are you doing? And I confided in them, and then that was shared with other people. And rather than it being something to ridicule, you know, a lot of my circle of friends thought it was pretty cool. I lost some friends over it, but for the most part, people supported me in it. And then when they saw all these major changes and good things happening with me and healing going on, although I don't know if they would have called it healing, they wanted to know more. And so my first mentor wasn't teaching publicly. I mean, she invited some of them over for some moon rituals, but she didn't really want to take on students. Her coven was full. And she had sent me at one point to her teacher, who was Lori Cabot in Salem, Massachusetts, a pretty famous author and activist, and who was my teacher for many years and is still a good friend and mentor to me. And she wasn't teaching at the time. She was going through some personal problems and transitioning from where she was teaching and what was going on. So her classes were kind of up in the air. So I found myself agreeing to leading this once-a-month moon study circle. And that went on for a few years. And I started getting messages more and more to teach, particularly in meditation. I mentioned a crow goddess before. I work a lot with the crow goddess Maka. And Maka would come in these meditations to me and say, you need to teach more. And at the time, I had no ambitions to be a writer or teacher. I was a musician. I was working in the Boston music scene. I wanted to be a singer-songwriter or, you know, involved in something creative, and not necessarily in metaphysics. And so the more I would meditate, the more I'd get that message, till finally I was so sick of it. I was like, okay, I'll teach more. But, you know, I was so busy with my job and relationships and everything else in my life, I really didn't understand how that would happen. And she's like, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And 3 days later, I lost my job. And I couldn't get a job, you know, anywhere locally in the music industry. I thought about moving to New York. I thought about moving to L.A. But I really just didn't want to live in those places at that time. So I just took the time on unemployment and tried to get some odd jobs that all ended fairly horribly and ended up just starting to teach more classes. When I put up a flyer that I was doing meditation classes, when I put up a flyer I was going to be doing, I think we called them esoteric classes before we put up Witchcraft and Pagan, I had a room full of people, and I was teaching in my parents' basement, and that started to become a supplemental income, and I used that time to write down some of my experiences, and eventually the once-a-month moon group of core people wanted to have more serious witchcraft training, and there was nobody really training publicly at the time, so they asked me just to teach them what I'd learned. So, you know, I started to put together a Witchcraft 1 course, which became the Inner Temple of Witchcraft, and, you know, they were hungry for more, so then I gave them what I learned in my second degree, which became eventually the book The Outer Temple of Witchcraft. And then my own personal practice was really experimental at that point. I was training in core shamanism and doing some of the Michael Harner work. I was looking into ceremonial magic. I really had a strong interest in alternative healing, and that led me into flower essences and herbalism and crystal healing, and that kind of drew me down deeper into more New Age practices and the study of theosophy. And so every time they asked me for more, I just kind of took what was in my personal practice and cobbled it into a course. And those courses eventually grew longer and longer and then became the books. So after a while, we kind of discovered we had a system of five levels and five major themes to it, and five different ways of looking at the mysteries. And so we started to teach it with that idea in mind, that it was a semi-complete or at least open-ended system, but it had structure to it, and that became the Temple of Witchcraft. And some people who graduated through the level started teaching it in that way and using the notes that I had. And eventually we thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had textbooks? And then the textbooks, you know, were manifested, and I was doing some other writing, so I switched over from one of my publishing companies to publishing with Llewellyn, and they were very interested in also putting out CDs, because a lot of people really, you know, like doing the inner work but have a hard time when the book says, oh, you take a tape recorder and record your, you know, your own voice doing these guided path workings. It could be easier just to be able to put on a CD and listen to somebody else who's experienced to take you through it and have appropriate music for it. So we recorded the CDs, and I feel like a major task in my life kind of culminated with the publication of six books, but five levels. The last level was divided into two rather large volumes. And from that point, it got really interesting because the whole people were taking the classes really started to develop into a community. And then the community decided to get organized, and we all sat down together and said, well, what are our shared goals? And we ended up establishing a nonprofit church, and we wanted to have land and wanted to have an earth-rooted tradition, you know, in a place where we could gather. And a couple short years after that, we found ourselves with property and raising funds to put a parking lot in for the first phase of our work and wanting to open up our classroom space in the spring. And it's been a really amazing journey with the temple.
And, you know, I love that you're bringing all of this up, Chris, because there's so many great examples in what you're sharing here for people that you don't always have to just jump in and tackle all of it all at one time. It just continues to unfold. You know, as you start on it, as you embrace it, as you work with it, it continues to open to you more and more and more, and it grows. And you actually answered one of the questions I had, which was, you know, what was that foundation for the whole series of books, starting with the Inner Temple of Witchcraft? Because I know that is one of Daniel's favorites that you've put out. And, you know, it just shows when we embrace that path, when we open to the work in whatever form that is, that it's going to continue to open to you, and it's going to show you where to go.
I had a teacher who said it's almost like breadcrumbs on the trail into the forest. You know, you can't see what's at the end of the trail, but if you keep following each little treasure, it'll lead to the next one and to the next one. I had no idea when we began, you know, that this is where we'd be. I had no ambitions for this. It all kind of, you know, developed very organically. But, you know, I'm very happy with where we're at. I'm very happy with what's going on in the community. I'm really happy to be of service. So it's been wonderful. But if I didn't follow those initial steps and just kind of let it happen and listen to guidance and prompting from friends, who knows where we'd be.
And I think that's really such a blessing. And I do love, because I was looking at all the different books that you have put together and all the things that you're offering now, course-wise and everything. And one of the things that you've done is, even though you've got that set that you started with, is that you've also done books for all these individual areas. You know, you've done them for love, and you've done them for prosperity, and you've done them for green magic, and these different areas. And I think that that's really useful, because at the time, for example, I was studying and learning and working with people, everything was just kind of compiled. You know, there was only a couple of resources to start with. And then everything was compiled into one little book. And you just kind of had to figure it all out. Like, you didn't have anybody really expanding on this stuff. And so I think that's very exciting that you've actually taken it to that next level, that you've taken it to that expansion.
Thank you.
I also like how you phrase it, that it's you are in service to the community, as opposed to a lot of authors seem to get author-itis. You know, I've written a book, so therefore I know more than some of our fellow pagans. And it's a matter of service.
I will say, in defense of my fellow authors, that knowing a few of them a little bit more intimately behind the scenes as we travel together and everything, a lot of authors are really introverted, and so sometimes they give off that air, and there's been some authors I was like, oh, I'm not going to like him, or I'm not going to like her. And and then once, you know, you sit down with them in a private space, you realize that, you know, what you perceived was very different from how they are, you know, in those quiet moments. But it can be difficult, because a lot of authors are very, you know, we're wonderful magic geeks, and sometimes when we're magic geeks, we're very introverted. Even myself, it's, you know, I have a hard time with some of the public aspects of it if we're not doing magic. But there's some that are, you know, you have that authoritis, and you gotta, you know, take that too, and hopefully everybody can be a learning experience. But for me, it's less about being an author, and it's more about being a teacher. You know, I think my books are a vehicle for teaching people who can't be sitting down with me. And you know, when you're in a class, there's always going to be something you're going to forget. There's always a detail that you know, you miss out. There's always some type of historical reference that you won't remember the name or the date to. And so the books are a great supplement to, you know, do a lesson and to be able to add on to that. And usually when I write, I've taught the topic for a number of years, and I keep class notes. You know, the printouts will be on the right-hand side, and then the blank to the left in the class notes in a binder or something. We'll have notes of people's experiences. So if you read my books, you'll notice that, you know, I'll often reference friends, sometimes by full name or sometimes by just first name if they don't want to be referenced, or some of them are pseudonyms because they don't want to be in the book specifically. But I'll always try to share other people's experiences, because I think that's one of the things you miss out in most books, is that if you're in a class, you get to hear everybody else's sharing. So I try to add that into the books too, because I think that's a good way to teach.
I agree. I use a lot of that same concept with what I do, and that's actually, you know, the one book I wrote, well, two books that I wrote, were done the same way as you. It was done, you know, in the sense to put out service, different field than what you're in, but done as a means of service and as a tool for the people I was working with. Chris, I've got Kevin has one more question, and then we're kind of at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to play a song. Daniel's on the line coming in with us too. So, Kevin, why don't you go ahead, and then we're going to go into a break song right after your question.
Okay, and I was hoping that Chris might be able to answer it, and then we can go to the break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We have people who listen here live with us today and also in archive, and a lot of them are solitary practitioners, and that they're not really out there. They don't talk to their friends or their colleagues or whatever about what they do spiritually, but they want to keep it in their day, like their day job and with their family and that kind of stuff. The question I'm asking is, what kind of advice can you give to the people who can keep the passion of their path in what they do during the day? It's, you know, instead of them having to just like hide, you know, in the grove, that they can be out Main Street, if you will, and sort of like be out there and keep their path alive, because they don't hear about it from anybody else, and they're just sort of, you know, feel like they're on a desert island, and the only time they can really connect with like-minded people are in venues like this. What kind of advice or reassurances can you give them that what they're doing is a good thing? Because they'll come back and listen to the show again and again. Go ahead.
I think the two things that I would suggest that are most important, at least in my experience, one is to use magic every day. A lot of people are trained with this idea that magic should only be done for these very super serious things, but I think magic is part of the flow of life. You know, I think you start out by studying magic, you learn how to do magic, and then you realize, wow, everything is magic. So even doing the little magic to zap for the parking space, even doing the little magic of feeling run down and sending yourself a little light to feel a little bit better, even doing magic to, you know, your computer's not working in the morning in the office and you want everything to be clear, even, you know, whether you're lighting sage and you can't light sage at your office, you fill the space with light and clear the energy out in that way. But use a little something every day to remind yourself that you are a magical being flowing with the universe. And then the second thing I would recommend is keeping some type of meditative practice that includes spirit contact. There's an old saying that says a witch is never alone. And I think, you know, it used to be with the witch hunters thinking, well, there's one witch, there's another witch, there's going to be a coven. But really, I think the spiritual meaning of that is that we realize there's spirits in everything. There's spirits in all aspects of seeing nature, the trees, the stones, the plants. They all have a consciousness that can keep us seeing the magic, but also we have spirit guides, we have ancestors, we have our deities. And keeping a meditative practice reminds you of that. So even if you're not in a deep meditation at work, but you need some help, you can put out that call to your ancestors. You can put out that call to the deities that you have relationships with. You have those connections. And that reminds you that even you might not feel with other magical people physically, you know, in your day-to-day office life, you know, you were there spiritually with them. They're there to support you. And you know, it's but keeping the practice of it keeps you from going crazy. A lot of people will not have the practice, but will, you know, be talking to the spirits all the time. And, you know, they might be getting responses. They might not be getting responses. They might not be able to differentiate what's their ego and you know, what's true spirit contact. So I think having a disciplined practice where you can, you know, really forge those connections in private, then they can carry out in your personal life.
I think that's excellent, Chris, and I appreciate that because that's true with whatever form you're using, whether that's magic or energy work or, you know, whatever form people are working with. And I hear this from people in all these different arenas that you've got to use it every single day. You've got to have your hands in it. You've got to be making that connection, because when you're not making that connection, if you expect to just walk into a ritual and have everything flow, it's not going to flow the same way as if you're using it every single day.
Absolutely.
So we're at the bottom of the hour here. We're going to go ahead and take a quick little break. And when we come back, Chris, Daniel should be on the line. I know he had some really great questions, too, for you in different areas as well. So hang in there with us, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Full of water foam, then it just floated away. I touched the sun, but I can't reach it. My vision was taken away. I fear I'll sink and fall. Unaware of his pain. When he returns, he will be happy. His thoughts will be with him again. And sometimes he fears he'll sink and song he hears makes him think. Its place. When I return, I will be happy. I won't have to do this again. And sometimes I fear I'll sing and the song I hear makes me.
Welcome back. This is Main Street Universe. My name's Jessie Ann Nichols George. We've got on the air today Chris Penzek with us, and I'm just getting ready to open up the mics again on everybody. Daniel and Janice have joined in with us, as well as Kevin and Brett on the air with us also. And I just want to kind of recap here. Really want to appreciate Chris for coming in, taking his time. He's been very busy schedule with a lot of different courses and classes going on. For those of you that like to follow any of his works, his books, CDs, they can all be ordered through his website at ChristopherPenzak.com. That's his last name is spelled P-E-N-C-Z-A-K. So that's ChristopherPenzak.com. I know also Chris is getting ready to take off on a cruise that he's doing. That's a Pagan Dream cruise with Raven and Stephanie Grimassi, as well as he's preparing for later in this year the Magic of Wales, which is a spiritual retreat that he has going on, which I'm sure he'll be happy to share with us and let us know if there's still room available to join in on that as well. Chris has been talking with us about how he kind of got his start. He's been talking with us about the series of books, The Inner Temple of Witchcraft, and what led to that, and as well as how to use magic in everyday life and the importance of using it, you know, not just for ritual, not just at the seasonal cycles and Sabbaths of the year, but as a daily practice, and also keeping up with that meditative practice, keeping that spirit communication going with each other. So that's been a real blessing. And Chris, I've got you back on the air. Daniel, Kevin, Brett, your mics are all live. So if you want to go ahead and Daniel, I know you had some questions, so I'm going to let you jump in and take over.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to say hello. And hello. We're live here in the studio at Cafe Fairfax, where we normally do the show, our Wednesday flagship show. I had an emergency work assignment, so I thank Jesse very much for sitting in and being the hostess today. She does our Friday show. And hello, Christopher Penzeck, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. And Kevin and everybody else, Brett, good to see you all. And Kevin's question I heard, I just got in during Kevin's question, and he must have been talking about the people that were around him when he was in Ohio, I think. There wasn't that many pagans in his circles when he was out there in the, not exactly the Bible Belt, but something like it.
Strange
where I'm at right now.
Of pagans in Ohio.
There's not a lot in Utah either, by the way.
Oh, I've been there, Jessica, I know.
This is, by the way, Janice. Say hi, Janice.
Good morning, everybody.
She's my normal hostess. I don't call
hostess.
Her host.
No, hostess.
Hostess.
Good morning.
Everybody's here. And Chris, I'd like to get right to it.
Sure.
I know it seems like you're like, what did I get into? There's like 12 people on the phone. Normally it's me and Janice, but we had some people sit in for us. Brett's one of our old co-hosts who will be back. Anyway, we've got that out of the way. Here's a symbol. We're in a music studio.
Yes, we are.
Out-of-body experiences. I remember reading in your bio that you mentioned that one of the things that got you into exploring spirituality outside of what you had known before that, which I believe was Catholic, for me it was Southern Baptist, exact same story. Started having out-of-body experiences. I was wondering if you could go into the one that you explained in your bio. I thought it was an interesting story. So many people start from that.
Absolutely. I had one really profound out-of-body experience when I was fairly young. I was in, like, the fourth grade, and I passed out, or supposedly passed out, during a class, a science class. And I really, like, looking back on it, the mechanics of it, it was something gory in science class about, you know, medical health and body stuff. And I think at that time my mind just couldn't handle it. And, you know, just often when we get into situations we can't handle, we somewhat disassociate our energy, our consciousness. But I did so in such a way that was really like an out-of-body astral experience. I have a vivid, even to this day, a vivid memory of being up in the corner of the room and having the perspective of the whole room, and me, you know, I slumped over backwards, so I caused a great stir in it, and I vividly see the teacher going over to, you know, my body slumped over backwards, and all the kids looking at me like, what the hell's going on over here, and you know, and just thinking like, wow, this is weird. How can I be looking at myself? And then snapping back and, you know, having her arm around me and being like, oh, you're okay. You just passed out. And going down to the nurse and you know, trying to talk to people about, oh, no, I saw myself. And like, oh, no, you just made that up. That's your imagination. And, you know, it was so vivid. I can't imagine it being my imagination. And so I just kind of filed that. And one of the few things that happened growing up that didn't make sense that nobody in, you know, adult life, whether it be religious or scientific, wanted to talk about and say, oh, that could be real, or this is what this is, or, you know, they have a name for that. And so when I came to witchcraft, I started asking all the questions of all the weird stuff that happened to me growing up, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's this. Oh, yeah, that could be that. Or, you know, we have all these different ideas. I had two kind of really growing up profound experiences. It was that astral travel, and then I had a profound psychic contact with a family member who had deceased maybe a few weeks after they had passed. And both were so, so vivid. And I think everyone told me just to chalk it up to an overactive imagination. And I knew I really couldn't. And it always kind of left a, an unresolved question in me. So when I came to witchcraft, I found a lot more of the questions were open to being talked about. Nobody said, oh, that's just your imagination, ignore it. You know, they wanted to explore it. They wanted to talk about it. They wanted to have this sense of understanding for me. And so I think that kind of won me over to a lot of witchcraft too, because people were willing to talk about the unorthodox.
And that brings me to another aspect of it. Did you ask your Catholic mentors, if you had them, I don't know how involved you were with your Christian church. I was somewhat involved, but I'm curious if you had gone to them and if they had an opinion of these experiences that they shared with you or not, or did you just not take
astral,
it?
Not the astral travel so much in the sense that, you know, at that day and you know, I was going to a Catholic grammar school. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. Pretty much everybody I was surrounded with at that time was pretty much in that worldview. So I don't think I ever really thought of it specifically as going to a religious mentor, but I would ask questions of teachers and parents and, you know, the adults that were around. And I think because of their Catholic worldview, it was, or even just a modernist view, it was like, oh, that's not real. That's you know, just your imagination. So that left me dissatisfied. And I think I saw all of it as the framework as being Catholic because I was going to Catholic school. You know, I had one nun in high school that was very open to talking about things that were very unorthodox. Sadly, though, she was fired only after 2 years of being there. They transferred her. But she was the first one to actually introduce the idea of God as a woman to me. She talked about praying to God and that you can talk to God every day. And I was like, oh, I like this. You know, I was not big on the confession and having an intermediary. So I intuitively knew that, you know, you could be your own priest or priestess. And she says, yeah, I talk to her every day. And we were like, what? You know, her, you know, it's God the Father.
I like
and she's like, well, yeah, she was just like, you know, that's just a symbol. You know, she's like, we have people who are, you know, wandering out in the desert and they needed a father figure when they're wandering out in the desert. And so that was the easiest way to describe something that's undescribable. You know, you could just as easily describe something that's undescribable as she, you know, why not? And she didn't last long at the school though. But it was amazing to hear that from a nun. And looking back on it, you know, I think she was probably this, you know, somewhat activist, political lesbian nun that I had there. I mean, just kind of looking at the archetype and the image she carried, she kind of had that stereotype. I don't think I realized that at the time, but, you know, she's this very kind of butch feminist woman who happened to be a nun, who happened to be teaching religion in an all-boys Catholic school, and she was purposely planting kind of these unusual and unorthodox ideas to us. So I loved her, but, you know, she didn't stand around long enough to, you know, have more questions. And at the time, too, kind of growing up as a gay man in a Catholic school and in the Catholic Church and realizing, I'm getting all these signals that say I'm not right, yet I don't feel like I'm not right. I don't feel like I've done anything bad. So perhaps this is not the place for me.
Yes. And Janice, I believe, had a question as well. Go ahead.
Yes. And good morning, Chris. How are you?
I've got a caller on the line with a question, Daniel.
Okay.
So, Janice, go ahead, and then we're going to get to our other caller that's on the line as well, so we can get both of you in.
Okay. I had a similar situation when my father had died, Chris, because I tell everybody who I'm close to that he was the inspiration why I became a witch. He had came to me on the same day that he died, and he had came and told me that he was dead. And it was kind of funny to me because he always drove this very big Cadillac, and he was by himself, and he was fully dressed, and there was no car outside. And the first thing I remember is, like, where's the Cadillac at? And he kept repeating to me that he was dead. So that meeting, if you want to call it a meeting, had prompted me to explore, because a lot of people were telling me that I was crazy, that I didn't know what I was talking about. It's not proper to see dead people, all these other things. So I can relate to what you're saying about how you discovered the other side, so to speak, or other powers and what they were teaching you in Catholic school.
Yeah, and it's hard to experience those things, particularly, you know, I think at any age, but particularly when you're young and have no support of it. You know, you walk away thinking like, oh, maybe I am crazy, and, you know, because nobody really is having those experiences or at least talking about them in a way that's supportive. So, yeah, it's a tough thing, but, you know, it's interesting that that whole brotherhood, sisterhood of witches, so many of us have a story that's like that. You know, I can relate to what you're saying. You're relating to what I'm saying. I'm sure there's people listening that are like, oh, I have a variation of that. You know, I think we've all, you know, had one way or another onto this path that, that can kind of relate to that sense of being other, you know, being different.
Right.
And we'll get to the caller quickly, and I just wanted to add to this right before the caller, Jesse, is that in my family, very similar thing, and there was people in my family that did have some mental health issues. All of them were the people that were seeing things, having experiences. So my mother linked it as, oh, eventually I'm going to go crazy. It never happened. They went downhill at far younger ages than myself. But go ahead, Jesse, with the caller.
And it's true, you know, when you're coming down with all these things, these lineage, and I'm going to bring this caller on in a minute, that, you know, I know for myself, I come from 13th generation of pagans, basically, witches.
Wow.
Wow. One side of my family. So it is really intense, and I think, too, as you're carrying that intensity from generation to generation, that, you know, you do. You learn that you're an outsider, and I knew that from very, very young as well. I mean, I was having premonitions at 4 years old, and I remember birth. I remember a lot of different things. So you don't understand that the rest of the world isn't seeing things that way until you start to talk to people sometimes. And it's
right,
like, okay, maybe I'm not quite supposed to talk about this just yet. But let's go ahead and get to this caller. They're from the 813 area code, and bring them on. Caller, do you have a question for Chris?
Yes, hello. My name is John. I am in Florida, and I know that Chris is coming down here, and I'd just like to ask him how he feels about his plans for Florida. I know he was, before he did a class at the Angel Gift Shop in Tampa, and I've been a big fan of his now for 9 years.
Hey, John. I'm excited to be coming down to Florida. I'm doing a little bit of a tour. I'm doing a workshop this weekend for a local group in the Orlando area. I'm mostly going to be in the kind of greater Orlando area. I'm going to be also next week at Avalon in Orlando for 2 nights, teaching about the Morgan. I'm also going to be at Lunasol Esotericas, which is a little bit north of there, and then I'm going to be at a place called the Witch's Brew, and this will all be kind of the lead-up before I go on that pagan dream cruise that they mentioned at the beginning, although I do want to correct that, sadly, Raven and Stephanie Grimasi had something unforeseen come up, so they will not be on the cruise, but that just means that I'll be taking over all the classes, and we have a mid-sized group of pagans that are going out on this cruise to do magic and witchcraft and rituals at night, and, you know, all the fun little kind of cruise daytime stuff during the day. I'm actually planning a lot of the workshops under the theme of the moon and the sea temple in turn-of-the-century occultism, particularly depicted in the works of Dionne Fortune, her novel Sea Priestess and Moon Magic. So I'm very excited to be able to do kind of sea magic on the sea, which will be interesting. I've never actually done that before. I've never been on a cruise, so I'm very excited for our trip. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I also know you're going to be my way in February for convocation.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
It's a
crazy, crazy couple months. Usually January, February are my quiet times, but I'm doing this tour and this cruise in January, and then I come home for a couple weeks, and then I'm at PantheaCon in California, which is probably the largest pagan indoor festival that I know of in convention. That's in San Jose, and then I'm literally home for 3 days, and then my partners and I fly out to present at Convocation. So
we'll make sure to make you feel welcome.
Ritual. Thank you. Convocation always does. Folks there in Michigan are amazing. I love going back.
Great. Thank you, John. I'm going to go ahead and put your mic back on mute here because we do have just a short time with Chris. And for those that want to find out about Chris's whole schedule, because he has a huge amount of stuff that's going on, you can go onto his website, ChristopherPenzick.com, go to schedule. The 2013 schedule is on there, and then he's also got special links with the Dream Cruise and the Magic of Wales Spiritual Retreat. So lots of options to connect with him. Go ahead, Daniel, because I think you had some other questions for Chris related maybe to the music.
If I could just add one quick thing too, that a lot of the events that are based specifically on the temple, because they're not my commercial events, can be found on templeofwitchcraft.org. So you can see things that are both local to our area and national events that are going on with other members of our group. If you're interested in the teaching, so that's just templeofwitchcraft.org.
And I'm getting that typed into our chat so people can see that too. Perfect.
All right. And that gets a symbol for a smooth transition with seven people involved in the conversation, folks. It's not always like this, but hey, it's a challenge and it's fun.
It's a learning experience.
Yes. And Chris, I saw that it said that you are a singer and a musician, and I wanted to just take you down that road just a little bit, or for you to take us down that road for a little bit. And I'm curious, when did you decide or come to the decision or find the passion that you said, hey, I want to sing, I want to play music. I'm a singer and I play as well.
That was actually in high school. I kind of go through these intense periods, or at least I have up until the witchcraft phase, which seems to be the focus of my life. But looking back on it, I go through these intense phases that kind of prepared me for different things. So in my younger childhood, I was very artistic, and I really focused on art lessons and learning kind of classical art and creativity and painting and drawing and all that, and really brought that into high school and then kind of hit the wall of like, okay, I've done that, I'm done. And not that I don't still draw at times, but that's not become like a huge outlet for me. And then I went very math and science through most of high school, and I thought I was going to be actually a chemist. And I tell people now affectionately that I thought, I just really like playing with little bottles, and I think I had a past life memory as an alchemist or something coming out there. And then I got to the point where, you're applying for colleges, and I thought I was going to be, going for chemical engineering or something like that. And I was just starting to play in a band, and I was just starting to learn guitar, and I was writing songs and things like that. And I just kind of declared to my family, like, no, I have to go to music school. And so I took the last year of my high school, my senior year, to, take voice lessons. And I was in some, local musicals and things like that, and auditioned to be a voice major, at a music school. And mm-hmm. ended up going to the University of Massachusetts music program and graduating with a degree in vocal performance. And at that time, I was studying the witchcraft. But it was really just kind of that weird impetus. And the funny part is that up until that point beforehand, I was always incredibly shy. I didn't speak well in front of groups of people. And, I affectionately joke to my students who don't like to make presentations or do public rituals that, you need that type of experience because, once you've I would joke that it was, heavy metal by night and opera by day. And, for the opera lessons and things like that, you'd have a jury before you that would critique you. And then for the heavy metal bars, I was sometimes behind chicken wire and there'd be bar fights going on and people throwing beer bottles. So I think if you can handle either of those situations, you can handle a new age shop or you can handle a public ritual.
Oh, yes. And I agree. And I wanted to ask your opinion because most of the time musicians come on the show, and I've had quite a few. One time I had Rob Fahey, who had a hit in the 80s, raised on the radio with his band The Ravens.
Cool.
And I ask them, and Kellyanne has been on the show as well as a great local band called Woven Green. And I'm curious about your opinion, since you're close to my age, but I won't say it over the air. We're very close in age, very close, similar generation. What is your opinion of how the music business has evolved and the way people spend time with it? Like before you'd buy the album and sort of take it home and spend all this time with it, and people use their record covers for many things. And you had this big artwork and everything else, and now it's just sort of it's a download you get somewhere, maybe for free. So
yeah,
I'm just curious what you think about the modern relationship between
publishing and all sorts of creative media. It's weird. I mean, on one level, it's great because you can have access to so many things. But it is a totally different experience. I mean, I remember the days of, you'd be running out to the music store and, you're getting the tape, you're getting, the album before that, or, just the beginning of the CDs, but they had, like, this full artwork, and, you were reading the credits and seeing who was involved in it, and you were, following along the lyrics when you're listening to it, and it was this whole experience. And I can't say that I've done that for quite a few years,
Yeah.
I think the only people I really do that with now is like, when I get a new Tori Amos album, I think I still do that with Tori, but that's about it. But on one hand, too, I was looking for a piece of music the other day, and I have to say it was really, kind of refreshing to not have to hunt it down and go out for it. I was just like, oh, I just looked it up on iTunes, and I was listening to it 5 minutes later. But it is, it's a weird process. I think, you know, there's experiences that are part of our generation that, that, you know, won't be a part of coming kids growing up and listening to music, but I think there's obviously experiences with them that, you know, we can't quite relate to. So kind of time marches on, but it's weird. Publishing's the same way too. Like, I'm trying to get used to the whole idea of the e-readers and Kindles and all that, but I like my books, you know, but I think it's also good when I'm researching something. I like the search and find function. If I need to find a phrase or a quote or something, I can find it much more easily in a, you know, e-book than I can in a written book. So it's got its pluses and minuses to it, but I think I'm a little old-fashioned myself.
I am, and with the books especially, I agree with a lot of the points you said. There's the good and the bad that comes with it. There's the convenience, like if I'm looking up something for the show, you know, or even a song download that I want or need. It's so quick and convenient, I've got to run out to the store. But I do kind of miss the old relationship that one would have with the art itself and with the artists, and now it's kind of, oh, I got one of their songs on out of thousands on my, you know, iPod or device or whatever it is. And as far as books, I totally agree. I just can't sit there and read a screen all the time like that. I really want a physical object. If they could make it out of something better than wood or whatever, if people want it to be more eco-friendly or the case.
Right.
And my friend and hostess Janice is here, and she's actually taken one of your classes before, or workshops, and she wanted to talk to you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know you probably don't remember me. I was in one of your classes at Sacred Space outside of Baltimore, Maryland, and you did a class on the Diane Fortune's Sea Priestess, I believe is the title, and it was a meditation with some oils and incense, and it was very, very etheric. And
I don't know if that was me. I don't think I did the Sea Priestess there. I think the first time I'm doing the Sea Priestess is on this cruise. So it might be something else. But I usually do
meditation.
But I
know it was you, because I have your Reiki book. In fact, I have your Magic of Reiki right in front of me, and I'm going to ask a question about that too.
Sure.
But it was in Sacred Space with Caroline Kenner, which is a good friend of mine.
I love Caroline. I'm actually excited to come back out to Sacred Space again this year.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I know that she has Lucia Tesh, who I met, I think about maybe 12 years ago when I had went to Pathon in California.
Yep. That's where I met her, too.
I was wondering your take on Sacred Space and other pagan, Wiccan, witch type of organizations that have festivals. And since you're coming back, you really enjoy doing Sacred Space?
I really do. I have to actually say, and this is not to say that I do not love my, you know, other parts of the country, but there's something in the D.C., Maryland, Delaware area that, like, is really going on. There's really, you know, I think the conferences there are very high level. The teachers that they bring out are very in-depth. I really liked speaking at Sacred Space, and I just came back from the Assembly of the Sacred Wheels Between the Worlds Festival, and that was a really high level
event. Oh, how was that?
Because well,
I missed that there.
It was amazing. I think it was real. I was so inspired by it. I actually sent an email out to all the leadership in the Temple of Witchcraft saying, you know, here's the dates for the next one. It's going to be in 2015, and, you know, block it out. I'd really like to see more of us going. I think we could learn a lot.
I
think they're starting a different cycle. I think they're starting a different cycle now. So I think they did the magical work they wanted to in that cycle, and that's my understanding of it, but that was my first one, so don't quote me.
Okay.
But, Sacred Space is also a really great one. I love Caroline Kenner. She really, you know, she's looking to bring deep education out, and I've always had a great experience. She's hosted me or encouraged me to go to different events down in that area for a while, and every experience I've had with her has been wonderful. You know, and a lot of the festivals, I mean, are pretty amazing, and I prefer at this time a lot of the more hotel conventions, ironically, for an outdoor nature-based tradition, just because I think they're a little bit more education-based, and I feel like if I'm going to travel, I really want to travel to teach. Not to say there's not education at outdoor festivals, but the outdoor festivals can be a little bit more distracting for some of the education practice, although some of the rituals are really amazing because they're outdoors and you get to do them really in tune. You know, but that's where I've been doing the outdoor festivals for about the last 12 years right now. So I'm actually taking a year off next year from festivals just to focus on actual workshop intensives and teachings. And the only festival I'll be doing in 2014 will be our Temple of Witchcrafts festival called Temple Fest. And that usually happens the week before Midsummer's. So, you know, and now being a part of a group that runs festivals, I have a great appreciation for how much hard work goes on behind the scenes that the people participate and even teach at have no idea about. So,
yes.
I enjoy
indoor festivals because, you know, after breaking a leg, being outside in the cold, it doesn't work for me anymore. So, but that's, I think, more because of body and old age. But I wanted to, also, I have taught at Sacred Space, too. Different classes. I'm considered a minor teacher because I know you are definitely a major teacher, but I really enjoy
teaching at Sacred Space.
At
the great festivals there, you know, I think it's all, I often go to a lot of the local teachers because you're going to hear things you're not going to hear at other places. So I think we're all just good teachers.
Yes. But I have a question regarding Reiki. I'm a Reiki master myself, a Shui as well as Sikkim. And I really do enjoy your Magic of Reiki book. But what I wanted to ask you is the chapter about Reiki magic, because I believe personally that there's a lot of magical callings and symbols and vibrations with Reiki. And I also believe that you can take it in a very positive way, but I also feel there's a negative vibration to Reiki as well. And it usually comes up with people that don't really get properly taught how to do the different, you know, Reiki 1, Reiki 2,
right.
ART, which is the way I was taught, which is advanced Reiki training, then the master class. You know, some people, they do 1 and 2 in a weekend, and they'll come back next week and they'll do the master class. And that's not really, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, it's not really teaching you properly how to process the energy of Reiki. So I wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there's a big difference between, and, you know, for magicians and witches and things like that, it's all about terminology and how we express things. But I think there's a huge difference between people who say that they practice Reiki and people who have actually been trained in Reiki. You know, it's not a popular thought, but, you know, Reiki is actually a lineage-based tradition. You know, to be attuned to Reiki really means to be initiated into the system of healing of Reiki, the tradition of Reiki, and it's passed from one person to another. And so I realized when I started teaching publicly and talking about Reiki, because we translate it as universal life force, you know, people say, oh, I already do Reiki, I don't need to be attuned, I don't need to have a teacher of it. And, you know, I'll try to explain.
I hear that all
the
time.
You're doing a type of energy work, you are working with universal life force, but you're not working in the system of Reiki. And the system of Reiki, when you're properly attuned, has certain safeguards to it, has a certain process. It has what magicians might call an egregore, you know, guiding it, and it has a structure to it. And I don't think it's the only system of healing that has an egregore and has a structure and has safeties to it, but it's specific. And if you come into it, you know, through those lines, then you get attuned to it when you're doing that type of work. And a lot of people don't, and then they feel that they're doing Reiki. And what I think is even worse is the people who don't get attuned to it, but then attempt to attune others to it because they're really not attuning you to anything. And I think that, you know, I don't like to use the word negative, but I'd say that harmful vibration or that harmful experience of it can happen, you know, when people are acting as if they have all the safeguards, but they don't. And so that makes things tough. You know, I think if you're working in the true systems of Reiki, and there's many different ones, so I'm not saying that any one system is better than another. I'm an initiate in a couple of them. But I think that has a certain intelligence that guides things for the highest good. So my experiences with Reiki magic have been really good or not at all if I've been trying to do something that might not be for that highest good. But I think it can go sour for people who, you know, really are not attuned to the system and the safeguards and that intelligence that guides it.
All right. Great. Good question, Denise.
I want to thank you. We're at the top of the hour here, and I know that you said that you had an appointment you have to get to. We're going to be continuing the show and continuing discussion for another half hour. You're welcome to stay with us. We, of course, love you, but we also don't want to impose on obligations that you have going on already because you've been so generous with coming on to our show.
Thank you so much. I had a wonderful time being on. If I didn't have a 1 o'clock appointment that I'd have to prepare for and get to my office for, I would love to stay on for, but if I stay till 12:30, I know I'll be late for the appointment. So.
Well, we're here if you choose to jump back in. Wonderful. Of course, we're going to love to have you here. But, again, we appreciate your time and all the information that you've shared with us today. And we'll continue sharing, again, your website, ChristopherPenzick.com, and also events that you have going on at templeofwitchcraft.org. And thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
I would like to say, Chris, right before you go, that if you do tell that appointment that it's Dan Michael and that it's Main Street Universe, they will forgive you. They'll go, oh, you're on Main Street Universe. You know, they'll say, okay, don't worry about it.
I have two people coming up from Boston who've been waiting a long time for this appointment. So if it was definitely going to rearrange.
Thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. You have a wonderful, wonderful day, and thank you for having me on. Blessed be.
All right, blessed be.
You
too. All right.
Yeah, I hated to cut you guys off there, but I know Chris was really having to take care of this other aspect there. So
I didn't even get it. That's cool.
So I didn't
Had mentioned that there was a potential for a crazy person to call. So when you said we had a caller, I got a little nervous.
We both got a little nervous.
Easy enough to press that mic
off. It was okay because as that person called in, they were very good. I thought about bringing up events that he had going on and sharing some of the things that he had coming up, which I thought was important because he's got so much valuable information. And I know when I was looking over his website, I was like, oh, my gosh, there's somebody that carries a harsher schedule than I do.
Really? Is that possible, Jesse?
I don't know. That's what I was wondering. I was like, is this really possible? Like, somebody else is doing as much as I am here.
Yeah. One thing I did want to talk to him about, and if he ever comes back, we'll get to that. Because I liked how one of his books was about city magic. And I get this a lot in the pagan world of people going, I don't feel magical in the city.
Why not?
A lot of times because they might be scared of being in the city or whatever it is. Some people,
that's his own magic.
Cities are powerful, magical places to me.
I've heard the city to here.
I didn't know he wrote a book that was a city magic book because he has like 15 of them. I have the Inner Temple book and I've had the Outer Temple.
The Reiki book.
Yeah. So I wanted to get into, if he ever comes back, I'll get into that. Because I think cities can be so very magical, and the people put their imprint and their energy and their effort and their struggle and everything else.
Yes.
You can't sit there and tell me that.
Very magical a city.
Nature is beautiful, but cities are very magical places.
City. I'm glad he answered at least one of my Reiki questions. I had actually five of them. So hopefully if he comes back, I can ask him the other four.
Yeah, it would be great to be able to get him back on again, I think. And it's true. I love what you're bringing up, Daniel, on the aspect of being in the city. And I think both being in the city and people who are carrying these extreme schedules, which a lot of people are these days, you know, keeping that magic going. And one of the points he brought up earlier in the show was use magic every day, you know, whether you're using it to get a parking space or, you know, I remember reading in some of the old books of Janet and Stuart Farrar, you know, change the stoplights and things like that. And he also brought up even taking those few minutes for meditative practice where you're staying connected with spirit and you're having a spirit connection and keeping that magic flow going. And I think that's the key is that they're just different types of magic. It's just like we have different types of elements. There's different types of magic currents. You have magic currents in nature, you have magic currents in the city, you have magic currents in Bible Belt areas, you know, you have, they're all over. It's just, you know, they're just different flows, just like air and earth and water and fire are all different flows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. So, anyway, welcome everybody. Welcome, Brett. Are you still there?
I'm here.
I see him on the line. We've got a caller
welcome,
on the
Brett.
Line. Let's see if we can bring him on. Brett should still be in there because I got his mic live if he's around. But I'm going to bring on that. We've got a question from somebody in the 313 area code, and your mic is live.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It's Marcy.
Hi, Marcy. How you doing?
I absolutely lost my question the minute you said you were picking up my line. Lovely.
Oh, well, hold on. You get a cymbal and some drums.
You get a cymbal and a drum, Marcy.
Oh, yeah, and a kick in the head for forgetting. Daniel.
Talking about city magic, maybe that was...
A little bit of Reiki, a lot of different things.
One of the other questions I had, Daniel, is you were working on your own music, and you shared some with me, and you've played a lot on the radio. Do you have any plans of actually getting that on viable media sometime soon?
Yes, I do. In fact, I have a new schedule, which means this show, Main Street Universe, is there are people that really want me to stop doing that sometimes, but I still I enjoy it. But
Aquarians think alike.
I have a new schedule. So my new morning schedule, which is really good because this frees me up. I'm not so absorbed by my job anymore. So I'm in there at 5 a.m. To some different times, but a lot of times I'm only there for 5 or 6 hours now. So it frees up all my time for all sorts of other things. So it'll really free up time for me to get together with Scott and this other engineer guy, and we'll finally finish the demo. I've been here for 2 years. We got one song.
Hey, it's something.
Oh, yeah, it is. So I feel good about it. I mean, I feel really good right now. I feel really good about it. I should feel good because I just biked for like 3 miles as fast as I could to get to the show because of my schedule change. But it was too late for me because, you know, Chris.
He was wired when I walked in. I mean, seriously wired. Hey, can you calm down, please?
Sure.
So.
Because, I mean, it's a very physical job than huffing on the bike, and it was too late for me to ask him to, could you wait another hour? Yeah, I wasn't even going to mess with it. I just had Jesse come in. So anyway, yes, I have a lot more time freed up now. So I'm not absorbed like I was before working those late night shifts in all hours of the morning. I wake up early. I'm home by like 12 now a lot of times. So it's a great new schedule. So I'm going to really start focusing on getting some more music out there. So absolutely.
Excellent.
As well as putting together a set list.
You definitely have to get Convocation on your schedule then, because we could use some new music.
Oh, yeah.
I
would
love
love to
all
look
of our musicians, but it's getting really old. Next year, it will be 20 years for our convention, and I'd like to see somebody new up there.
Yeah, I'm going to start looking at pagan circuits, festival circuits, as well as Unitarian churches. I'm looking into all different aspects of when I'm out on the road, what kind of gig can I get? Festivals of different kinds, just music festivals, pagan festivals. They're also the funnest type of gig. Sometimes you just bring a tent and you crash there at the festival.
Exactly.
As well as, of course, in the case of Convo, it's in a hotel, as well as looking at Unitarian churches, any local pubs in the area of people I start to meet. And I have a vehicle coming within a month. So within a month, I'll have a minivan perfect for a musician who's going to be doing electrical work on the side, and a good show van for when we get the digital stuff to go out on location and do things.
Yeah.
So it's
doing some articles, or not articles, stories, because you know I have that reporter thing going on, and I'm going to be doing more reporting, hopefully not only here, because we have the hair show coming up, but also with World Reggae Party. Because I have a couple different guests from the reggae world coming up in the next month or so.
The thing's going pretty good for that on her front there.
And,
so, yeah,
and
it's
Daniel,
definitely
you know,
in the order. I think 2013 is going to be, like, we were setting up the
very good year.
The infrastructure this year. You know, me and Kevin and Brett and everybody that started this with us, and Janice, of course, and Jesse. And now I'm going to start taking it in starting with my networking and contacts and start making a tour, you know, and getting a vehicle. I've set a goal for it before, you know how that is. There's the old saying, it's not achieving goals, it's the problem, it's setting one.
Yeah.
So it's set. So I'm getting a vehicle, and yeah, definitely going to, and taking it to the road, not just finishing the demo, but getting on the road.
And Daniel, another thought that I just had, that if you could actually get a CD put together, is to see if you can connect with some of the people at the Tucson Gem Show, because they're kind of paying some big bucks down there at to be there at the show, and a lot of them are looking for new, fresh entertainment to be at their booths and to bring entertainment in at night.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that
another
would be
aspect we talked about too with Jesse and I, since she does book tours, us working together for any shared dates of, oh, yeah, yeah, this is a place that might have some kind of interest in music or to sell it or whatever as well.
But you would
so.
Have a high volume of people there, high, high volume of people. It just
cool.
hit me.
Oh,
hey,
yeah,
we all want to
see music.
The more events and the more public situations that anything can be marketed in, even just a stack of CDs sitting on the table at the gate of any convention or, you know, near the door, people spot new things. And if they can put their hands on them, 9 out of 10 people will buy them.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Matter of fact, I knew a girl that did, she had CDs for the music that she did, and she went around and just had people set stuff up in their homes, actually. And she would do some meditation work or things or do some of her work live. And then everything was done by donation. And then she just sold like a huge amount of CDs there at the party. And it's like, you know, you sit there and you sell 20 or 30 CDs at a party in a night and you're not doing too bad.
No, not at all.
You know, for
when
a couple
Kellyanna
hours of time.
In Stones, she... It was a certain price at the door. I don't remember, or I won't go into it. It might be personal. So I kind of remember, but we're on the air. But she sold, there were 50 people in there. They each paid a door fee, and she sold, people were lined up buying her new CD. So she, at the end of the night, you know, it was a nice chunk of change for her. She basically played a 40-minute gig at a New Age shop.
You know, Daniel, I'm sure you could do a rogue showing at Convo if you maybe put a note if you came. You
right.
You'd be sneaky about it.
I just, like I said, this year, I don't think so, but I'm definitely shooting it for next year and other festivals as well. You know, I'm with my new schedule, which might just eventually evolve into me making my own living anyway, both with electrical work, music, and occasionally readings, but I'm not really taking that to the bank as much. That's just I'm doing that more for the experience. If I get hired to do that at Sticks and Stones, which I have to talk to them again about that because we had scheduled flip-flops.
Readings also work when you visit the conventions. At Convo, we have this little get-together during the weekend we call, something invitational. Brett, help me here. Do you remember what it is? Divination invitational.
Divinational invitational.
Oh, divinational
yeah,
invitation.
Along that line. Where
we go,
basically
yeah,
do,
little...
we give a reading, get a reading.
Ah.
Well,
and
I'm thinking about next year
festival,
for it, too.
We actually have,
right now, I'm
vendor booth
crap, money-wise. Very much so.
I'm sorry, I think something got crossed there, but that's okay.
Yeah, we did. That was weird. Okay.
Okay.
But, at our summer festival, too, we have a small vending area, and there are also readers there that are for hire. So there's all sorts of opportunities to use all of your skills when you come to one of the events.
And if they need anything wired, I can do that, too.
What kind of festival do you have in the summer? Because one of my FOI sisters was talking about you must come to the Michigan Pagan Fest or something
yes,
like that.
Yeah, the Michigan Pagan Fest. It's at Wayne County Fairgrounds, and it's Father's Day weekend.
Okay.
It's a day event. There's a hotel quite literally right next to the park. You can walk from the hotel to the park or drive your car around, whichever way you want to go. Everything we need is right there on the corner, you know, stores, whatnot.
Okay.
You can also camp if you don't want to spend the...
My camping days are pretty much over, but I can do a hotel real quick and drive through it or drive to it.
And we do get convention rate. It's all available on the site. If my call would be quiet long enough, I can run back to the computer and post a link. today.
Brett, are you still there?
I'm here. I just have people in the background. Yes, you were saying?
You wanted to ask me something?
For later. It was about Reiki.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
No problem.
It always sounds like he's coming from something really traumatic. Sorry, Brett.
Like, well, I have to unmute, and then I unmute to get on the show, because I mute because of all background noise, because I'm at school for most of the time I'm doing the show.
I understand. I'm just giving you a hard time. Kevin, are you still there? Kevin,
I am.
Yes.
How are you doing, sir?
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here.
All right. How are you doing?
Kevin.
Good. I've just been listening to you all carry on.
Ah.
Sounds like a fun place, huh?
So it was great to have Chris on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the leaders in our world.
Yeah.
Who's out there sort of like showing everybody that it's still going, still alive.
A little younger,
to, like,
too.
Oh, yes. He's definitely getting the younger ones.
He's going. Absolutely.
So, I didn't know he was going to be at Sacred Space this year. I might have to think about going now.
Yeah, and by the spring
and
is when
Janine,
I'm making my move.
Up
so maybe
his and, wall, and then you could ask your questions there of him.
Oh, if I go, I would definitely ask. And I get him to sign the book because I thought he signed it, but he didn't. But I had a lot of useful information from his meditation class, even though I would have sworn it was about Diane Fortune, though, because I don't usually do much with Diane Fortune.
Chris does so many lectures, I can't even recall all of the ones that I've sat through. He covers about every aspect you can find. But my favorite one he did at our Pagan Fest here a couple of years ago, and it was, we worked with baneful plants, and I believe the name of the ritual was the Green Man Ritual. I definitely found a new appreciation for those plants. We actually got to consume, dilute concoctions of each plant along with in the working. It made for some extremely interesting journal entries that weekend.
Yeah, when
you know what's really great with work that I noticed when I was looking around on his all of his events is they're so extremely affordable, it's ridiculous. Like I couldn't believe that some of his stuff is just suggested donation, $15, you know, for a 3-hour course, which is nothing these days, because a lot of
the major presenters and a lot of the big events, even when they're in smaller venues, they run in around here between $15 and $25, or they're included, you know, within the price of an event.
Yeah,
so
and I mean,
they're definitely reasonable.
So affordable because it's so different. You know, I look at it with like the self-help industry and stuff that I'm in, and, you know, you wouldn't even get close to that price normally.
No.
So to have
of
somebody
of
his wisdom and wealth and knowledge even at such a reasonable price is amazing.
Yeah. All right. Well, how much time are we looking at here, Jess?
You know, we're down to, like, the last 8 minutes here.
Both 20.
Yeah. Well, my clock is saying basically about 8 minutes left for on air.
Yeah, it does. It says 7:59 here on the studio page that we both have access to here.
I do want to say thank you to Marcy and Jesse and everybody at Main Street Universe for sending out
all shares and everything.
Good positive energy for my mother when she had her pneumonia and other matters. David and I are going to go to Harrisburg this weekend to see her so I can actually see what's going on myself and talk to her doctor and the whatnot. But I wanted to thank everybody for giving out positive energy and healings to my mom.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Janice. You know, that's part of that community that Chris was talking about earlier, that it's always there for you. You know, you can always go to your brothers and your sisters, so to say, and they're going to be there supporting you.
It's good to see she's getting better.
Yes.
It's great to hear that she's doing better. Absolutely.
I recently had a death in the family of my grandfather, and he was one of my favorite relatives. And he was the one that I think I mentioned on the show that, well, he was always saying something a little controversial, and he was kind of quiet. So he just, I realized he was a lot different than a lot of the other relatives I had. And it took me years to learn that. He was just a quiet kind of old military guy. But he had traveled the world. He was very passionate. And he was the one that I had mentioned before that at the Christmas dinner, he was totally out of it. And he was the one that looked up and said at the end of the prayer, said, "Amen, and so mote it be." But I figured out why he said that, because I was like, that's weird of him to say that. I didn't know he had any sort of, not that saying can't be from something else, but what it was is he was a Mason, and they
I have plenty of Masons.
I didn't even know he was a Mason, but they use that language in their rituals. So
most
so
older
was,
Masons don't go around broadcasting that they are either.
No, I never knew.
No, that's
my whole life.
I never knew. He was 83 years old, and I never knew.
Mason group, and they're like, "Oh, we heard that you're relatives," and I'm like, "Well, what lodge were they?" I'm like, I have no clue because they're not sharing this with me. Thank you.
They did.
Yeah, exactly. It's private for a reason.
They did. I wasn't there. I didn't see any of it. They did a Mason ritual there at his viewing. I wasn't present for any of that, but. But I was like,
usually
that's why
when they do a burial ritual in private.
Hey, do you mind if
it's a brotherhood thing? They don't even include family in it.
I wasn't there.
By the way,
my
dad said back in October that he was a Mason also.
Oh, okay.
Who was?
Is it your father, Kevin?
Yeah, he was a Mason. I heard at his funeral. Of the 33rd degree. I'm not sure if that's what everybody is, like a private or something, but didn't know.
That's really high
people
up there.
Do eventually get there if they live long enough?
Yeah.
My grandfather was Eastern Star. I didn't know about it until her funeral.
Yeah. I had no idea.
My Uncle Sam was a Prince Hall, and I didn't know about that until his funeral. So you know a lot of stuff at the funeral, unfortunately. Sometimes you need to know about it while they're still alive.
But then you come into possession of their personal
character.
Belongings
he traveled the world.
And discover the truth.
Yeah.
What did you say, Marcy?
You come into the possession of their personal belongings and you discover the truth. And it's something. I'm sitting here staring at a bookshelf, and I have a Master Mason's Bible that I happened to acquire at a used bookshop here in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really kind of shocked to see it. You know, ordinarily you do see Bibles from time to time in resale shops because they do end up there in various ways. But to see a Master Mason's Bible, this thing is full of signatures of the officers of his court and his group. It's got clear identifying marks to who it belongs to.
Mm.
And I'm really actually kind of curious how it got there, but my mission is to find its home. What I'm thinking actually occurred is that the gentleman passed away, and a number of years later his wife passed away, and people came to clean out the home and didn't realize
right.
what they were discarding. They just got rid of all of the big bulky
books.
No one likes to move books, and
this
particular book was mixed in there. But luckily, the owner of the shop is a very good friend of mine. He knows I'm a complete book fanatic, and I collect Bibles. And he also knows that I know some people that are in the Masonic community, and he knew that I would find its home or that I would at least keep it in my own personal collection. So it sits here for now until I could get a hold of we actually have Acacia House again at University of Michigan. They were a Masonic group that was there at the beginning, in the first few years of the existence of the university. And they disappeared for a number of years, and the whole order was taken down. And about 17 years ago, they came back in to the community, back into the Masonic community, and requested a charter. So we again have Acacia House, and this gentleman happened to be a 33rd degree in Acacia House. So when they have their formal meeting next year, if I have not found a family member of this person who would like his Bible, I'm going to dedicate it to their house so that it's properly taken care of.
Oh, that's good.
That's a great idea.
Well, we are running low on time, and I want to give a bit of good news or a bit of news before we go. This Thursday, Zariana Radio was our 150th episode of Main Street Universe.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yay!
Yay.
Good job.
Rah, rah, rah.
So we've done quite a bit this in the last year.
So
I just want to say thanks for everybody showing up again today. I mean, it's been great having like everybody on, and
except for Evan. Now Evan is cool.
Yeah.
The first part of the
but
show.
We were all out and forth.
You know, listen to the archives on it, and I know again, Chris, all of his information, his books, his CDs, his events, everything that's going on, ChristopherPinzek.com. And he also mentioned he's got several events he's working with at that can be found at templeofwitchcraft.org as well. So I wanted to make sure we got that in there and just got those thank yous in, because that was amazing having him on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was.
It looks like we got about 16, 17 of Jesse.
Yep.
So thank you very much, Jesse, for sitting in.
Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah. Pleasure.
Thanks, Marcy.
Thank you.
Bring in.
Marcy, thanks, Brett.
And for the share.
And Kevin.
Kevin and
yep.
Brett everybody. And Denise and Daniel. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank
bye,
you.
Everybody.
Glad to be here, as always.
Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your day.